Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, good to be with you, Payne and Pendergast, on a Wednesday. Happy New Year, everybody. Appreciate you. Text message. This goes back to a discussion Seth and I were having in the opening hour of the show. Like, how far outside of Houston do you go? What's the furthest you would go to where you still refer to it as Houston when people ask you where you're from?
Do you say you're from Houston or you're a Houstonian or whatever?
Yeah. This is a good one. Morning, fellas. I'm from Needville. Anytime someone asks me that isn't from the H, I say Houston. I always get a weird look if I say Needville. Needville sounds made up. Needville sounds like one of those things that you would say, like if you had a significant other that you were kind of on the outs with because they're just like they're very high maintenance. You'd be like, yeah, she lives in Needville. Population her, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
that's what it sounds like.
Population her.
Yes. So I get
Needville. Needville does. With all apologies to the original, Jebediah Need or whoever that it's named after. It does feel like it feels like a place that was like helping people out during the Depression. I'm blanking on the name of those programs. Yeah.
Oh, like government programs that help people.
It was like, we relocated all these Okies to Needville.
Right.
They were very much in need.
Right.
Yes.
Just government checks rolling into this.
Yes. Hometown. Yes. Yes. I was asking. New Deal, Texas. I'm always curious about that because Christy Rieken is from New Deal. But New Deal was like one of Roosevelt's initiatives, the New Deal. So I always wonder, I'm guessing like most rural places in Texas these days, it's decidedly not Democratic. I wonder if they've had discussions about changing the name of
New Deal.
Or not Democratic Party or not on the socialist side of things.
Right.
Raw Deal. Maybe Raw Deal, Texas.
For Houston people, this is a text message. For Houston people, I give them Cypress. For non-Houston people, I say Houston. Yeah, that's what I always wonder. Like, if you're outside of Houston, you just start with Houston, and then they go, I used to live in Parker, Colorado, which is outside of Denver. So when I meet people in Colorado, I'm like, I used to live in Denver, and they'd be, what part? And I'd say Parker, and then so I get a little more specific.
So this is how Needville came to be. August Schendel founded the town of Schendelville in 1891. It was basically his house, a store, and a cotton gin. That was the whole town. In 1894, he applied for a post office. At that time, the town was named Schendelville. Mm-hmm. He applied for a post office using the name Needmore as a joke, since they always needed more of everything.
Yeah.
But since Needmore, Texas already existed, the post office amended the name to Needville. So hats off to August Schendel, who didn't name it Schendelville or anything like that. He started off making a joke about the name of his own town. That is a selfless man right there.
Did he choose to make it Needville though? Or did they make it Needville and he couldn't change it after? Because I'd be a little, if I were Schendel, I'd be a little angry. I'm like, I had my name in this town. And now, you know.
Like he maybe just did it as a joke.
Yeah.
And then they were like, okay, here you go. And it's not even the joke that you asked for.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, no, I want it named after me. You know?
Okay.
Yeah. That's.
I think it was probably like most people in Texas in the late 1800s. They were drunk on whiskey all the time.
Yes.
So it was probably something. I'm guessing whiskey was involved in it somehow.
Yeah. So the Pro Bowl rosters are going to get announced tomorrow night on ESPN. They're going to announce who made the Pro Bowl. They put out the final list of top vote getters, top 10 at each position. And this might be, you know, Seth, how I love to read into non-football things as far as like how a season's going for somebody. And when I say non-football things, I mean like stuff not like on the field. Like you could argue C.J. Stroud has struggled more this season because he's thrown more interceptions or he's taking more sacks or he's missing open receivers. This is one that kind of speaks to, I guess, maybe popularity to some degree, but I think you know, it's kind of intertwined with performance, is that C.J. Stroud, who coming into the season, I think you could argue was one of the future faces of the league, and may still be, not even among the top 10 vote-getters at quarterback amongst fans for the Pro Bowl. And Jaden Daniels, who is like this year's C.J. Stroud, number two overall pick, turning around a downtrodden franchise, made the playoffs, won double-digit games, going to be a runaway winner for Rookie of the Year on the offensive side. Jaden Daniels won. Joe Burrow, too. They're not even in the playoffs, the Bengals, as of right now. Joe Burrow, too. And then Jared Goff, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson. You got Baker Mayfield and Bo Nix right now in the top seven, and C.J. Stroud, Sam Darnold's nine. C.J. Stroud's nowhere to be found on the vote on the voting.
Sam Darnold, that one hurts. That stings. That's they got a head coach and offensive coordinator that's done a great job with Sam Darnold in a way that we haven't been able to pull off with C.J. Stroud.
We have not.
Yeah.
Not even in the top 10, man, right now. It's a rough go. It's a rough look.
Travis Kelce got the most Pro Bowl votes.
Yeah, that's kind of cheating, right? I mean, it's online.
That's
it's all
the Swifties.
Yeah,
that's a lot of Swifties. Yeah, he wouldn't have if it were football people doing that. But that's the way it works, man.
Yeah,
that's how the fan voting goes. Who's the most, other than Travis Kelce, who would have the most kind of non-football fan support?
Oh boy, because I'm looking. The rest of the top five is Jahmyr Gibbs is two. Like the Lion fans showed up at the voting booth for this thing. Like you got a ton of Lions that are in the top five at their position. Who's got the most crossover appeal?
DeMar Hamlin.
DeMar Hamlin's ninth among safeties.
Is he really?
He's
Okay.
Yeah, like DeMar.
He's getting a sentimental vote there.
It's a different kind of answer to your question, but yeah.
Yeah. Like, oh yeah, just for any reason other than like the actual
how good they are.
They're a crossover sensation for whatever reason.
Right.
And yes, very different reasons, but there's something added to it above and beyond the playing field.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of who the other one would be. I'm just trying to think like across commercials and things like that. Like Mahomes has great commercial appeal, but he also deservedly is in the conversation for the Pro Bowl every year.
Who is the one that's the most grudging acknowledgement, you think? I feel like Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield might be the guys where people are most like, well, all right, I guess. I have to.
Yeah, that's a good one. I've come around on. I like Baker now. I used to hate Baker. I like Baker now.
Baker, I was always intrigued by because it was so clearly tied to his injury and the fact that he plays for a train wreck of an organization.
Yeah,
that there was something there until he injured his shoulder, and it was. You know, I'm always skeptical of guys that are affected by a separated shoulder and their non-throwing arm. Baker's was a nasty. It wasn't just a separated shoulder. It was like a shredded shoulder that he was trying to play through.
Yeah. I like that veiled shot at Trevor Lawrence you just had right there. That was good.
That was
solid.
Trevor, it's always something. It's like, he had an ankle. Or, no, he had a knee. No, he had a separated shoulder. He had split ends on his hairdo.
Yeah, he's like the game Operation where the guy's got everything going on. Someone says, to be fair, every national game the Texans played this year, CJ wasn't good.
Yeah.
And
to be fair, statistically, he's not close.
He doesn't deserve to be in the conversation.
Yeah, he's not in the top 10 of hardly anything. Yeah.
And yet, the commercials that I've seen for the Pro Bowl all have CJ running down the field during the flag football game, smiling after he threw that dime to Jamar Chase in the back of the end zone.
Yeah.
And we'll see. Quarterbacks, you know, a lot of it's like how many of these guys back out. You know, so we'll see.
I hope CJ at that point, while the Pro Bowl is being played, is like sleeping in a hyperbaric chamber.
I do too.
Healing up and not obviously, unless the Super Bowl is being played the next week.
Yeah.
And the Texans are in it. So
that would be nice.
Let's entertain that fantasy for a moment. But yeah, I just, this needs to be a quiet offseason for CJ. I don't think that any of those guys were like way too out there or way too aggressive or anything, but I think this was a very good, this is a very good lesson for a lot of the younger players on the Texans, that it's not so simple, that you don't just keep getting better every year by momentum, or you can't just chart it out on a graph and say like, oh, wow, look at how much we improved. So next year we'll improve by the same amount. It's just, it's a battle every single year to be good at all. If you won a Super Bowl, you got to battle like hell to win one game that next season, the first game of the year. And those guys all very much understand that now.
Yep. Someone says, I wonder, will State Farm bring Baker back as a pitchman? That was Progressive that Baker was speaking for, not
State
Farm.
And he had some of the best insurance commercials out there.
Tremendous.
They're genuinely funny. Him, yes. Like treating the stadium like it was his, like it was his own house and everything. It was awesome.
Yeah. That was back when he was on the Browns. Like I begrudgingly like those commercials. I legitimately like Baker Mayfield now.
Who's got the best athlete commercial or insurance ads right now?
Case Keenum's is pretty good. These backup quarterback
ones?
That's
a series. That's a multiple. Yeah, but I guess the backup quarterbacks in general for those.
Yeah, for those, the backup quarterbacks in general.
I grudgingly enjoy – I like Jake from State Farm enough. Like, he's a very likable guy.
Yeah.
The role he plays, at least. And so I fight – the fact that Andy Reid – is so goofy on those, I think is Andy Reid might be the best athlete on an insurance ad right now.
Rusky doo.
Him stealing fries and everything.
Yeah.
It's fun.
This isn't NFL, it's college, but I like the Fanville commercials for Dr. Pepper.
Oh,
with Brian Bosworth as the sheriff. Those are very, very funny. I like those.
Fanville looks like a place that's probably a lot like Needville, Texas.
Yeah, maybe even more annoying. Not that Needville's annoying. Sorry, if you're from Needville, I didn't mean to imply that you're one level of annoying and Fanville's the next level.
Yes.
But there's a lot of annoying people in Fanville.
You nor August Schendel would I ever call annoying.
I feel like I learned something today, man. Appreciate that Needville nugget there. That was pretty good. Schendel, huh? Schendelville? These are the Texans that are in the top 10 at their positions for the Pro Bowl. How many of these guys do you think end up making the Pro Bowl, Seth? Derek Stingley Jr. And by the way, the selection process for the Pro Bowl is part fans, part players, part coaches. I think it's a third each. So this is only one third of the criteria to get in. There's only six Texans that crack the top 10 at their position. Mm-hmm. Derek Stingley Jr. is seventh at cornerback.
Seventh.
Yeah. Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson Jr. are third and fourth at edge rusher.
Okay, good.
Behind TJ Watt and Miles Garrett.
Yeah.
Joe Mixon cracked the top 10 at running back. He's 10th. And then the two specialists, Kyahmi Fairbairn, 6th among kickers. Tommy Townsend, 3rd among punters.
Tommy Townsend, 3rd among punters.
Tops in the AFC, by the way.
What's that?
And Townsend, 3rd overall, but he's tops in the AFC.
Oh, top in the AFC.
Yeah.
I think Townsend does it. He adds a little flavor to it just by being as fiery as he is.
And with the long hair,
people love
too.
Seeing, I'll tell you one thing. For marketability, if you're a white a defensive player or apparently punter especially, grow your hair out long. It's very eye-catching, and people tend to look at you as a Viking. I think that's what it is. They feel there's a Thor element there.
Yeah.
They love seeing a psychotic long-haired dude running around because it feels like Thor. Clay Matthews would be the most Thor-like.
Clay Matthews, and then you have Timu Clay Matthews, who's Brooks Reed. Yes, play with great energy and fire, grow your hair out. And I would say, too, the other thing Tommy Townsend has is he's got suns out, guns out, man. He's got those sleeves rolled up.
Yeah.
You know, he shows off those guns. Did you see him celebrating after that 70-yard punt, which was like the only highlight of the Ravens game? He's running over to his own sideline, like with the arms out like this. Like, who's the man?
Yeah.
Who's the man?
What's my name?
Say my name. Yeah.
He was like that Jamie character from Ted Lasso. Like, it was almost like me.
Jamie Tart.
Me.
Tommy Townsend, do-do-do-do-do. Tommy Townsend, do-do-do-do. Yeah. So how many of these guys make it, do you think, the Pro Bowl? Because I think these are the six.
I don't know. I feel like if you're top 10, you're going to have an option too, because so many people opt out.
Yeah.
And then with the defensive – so Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson – and because remember, it's just the AFC.
Yeah.
I don't know if Joe Mixon makes it.
The AFC is light on running backs. I did a little bit of checking into this.
Derek Stingley, because remember, you're just looking at the fan voting.
Right.
The players and coaches are going to – like Stingley's going to have more votes. He's going to be higher up in the voting.
He's making
the players.
It.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I think likewise, the voting, the players and coaches will vote for Daniil and Will Anderson. Mixon will be the interesting thing because I think a lot of players and coaches will appreciate the level of difficulty that he had this year.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it's not. It was a bad rushing offense, so I don't think he'll make it.
Okay.
And Tommy Townsend. I'm not sure. Like, Cam Johnson's in the AFC still.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't feel confident in anybody else. Those guys that I mentioned are the ones I'm confident in.
If I put the over-under at 3.5, I'd probably go under.
Yeah.
But I think they've got a shot. Will the ones that deserve to make it, like truly deserve to make it, Derek Stingley Jr. and the two defensive ends, 100% deserve to be on those teams. Like, blindly, I'll say. And I know T.J. Watt and Myles Garrett are both in the AFC. I'm not saying that they need to be voted in as starters, but I think you're going to have four edge rushers there. I think that's your four. It's Watt, it's Garrett, and it's the two Texan guys.
I wonder how many listeners we have in Needville. The population is 3,089. It's a pretty diverse population. Just like a lot of Houston suburbs. Yeah. That was one thing that bothered me. Remember that article that was written during Harvey about how, like, well, all of this togetherness and everything is just an illusion based on these suburban places that all have, like some of the most ethnically diverse, like, cities in America are the suburbs of Houston.
Yes.
Like, it's a place, it's very unique to where we actually commingle with people who don't look like us way, way, way more than even a lot of other diverse cities where it's, a lot of big cities, it's like, yeah, we have diversity. The black people live over here. The white people live over here.
Yeah.
And we have a few Asians. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, Houston, it's everything. So Needville, likewise.
Melting
town
pot.
Of 3,000.
Yeah.
58% white.
Yeah.
8.3% black.
Yep.
30% Hispanic.
There you go. Needville.
Native American, only 0.23%.
Okay.
Asian, very few, very underrepresented. From, I'm going to go start an Asian town in Needville. That's going to be my thing. I bet they probably don't have one good Chinese restaurant.
You're gonna start. Oh, I see what you're saying. So Chinatown, part of Needville, is what you're going to start.
Needville and its 21 Asian residents need a place where they feel comfortable and can go get kind of some of their,
All the street signs are going to be in Chinese.
It won't be Chinatown or anything like that. It's going to have to be Asian town.
Asian town. I got you right. Right.
Both only, Southeast only, Asian and Asian. Yeah.
Only,
every,
only, like, only four of them are Chinese. Yeah.
If you got an Asian in your hyphenation, then it's Asian town.
Come
there
one, come all. As long as it says Asian. Yeah. Oh, that's funny. Someone says Dan Campbell on the Applebee's commercials is pretty funny. He is.
Oh, I haven't seen those
yet. You haven't seen Dan Campbell on the Applebee's commercials?
No,
he's a manager at Applebee's with the headphone and everything, and he walks up to a booth of people placing their order, and he tells the guy to put the menu over his mouth when he places his order, like a coordinator. That's really funny. Yeah, Dan Campbell's really good. All right,
I've been doing I don't see many commercials at all anymore. I've kind of got a process for putting it on mute so I can do some work and everything.
Yeah, you're missing out, man. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. I'm here for this kind of shade at a divisional opponent, and it comes from a Texans legend. We'll have that for you coming up.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
I like when J.J. Watt goes on the Pat McAfee show. My only complaint is that I wish he had a professional microphone. Like, he's hard to hear sometimes.
I know, yeah, and it's – I've actually – There's very simple solutions. I've struggled with microphone audio quality on my own social media stuff before. But yeah, they've got lots of really good microphones that you can just plug into your iPhone, and there you go.
Yeah,
it's like studio quality sound.
Yeah.
I think McAfee likes to kind of keep it feel like it's grittier and more casual and everything.
Yeah,
it's almost a badge of honor that our guests don't need to have studio quality sound.
I like to be able to hear, you know, and you can hear them, but it's not great. Yeah. So anyways, I bring this up because we're about to play some J.J. Watt audio. One of the underrated things about J.J. going on the McAfee show, especially amidst this tumultuous time for Indianapolis Colts fans and former players, where this team seems to be teetering on the brink of some sort of firing going on, either with the coach or the GM or maybe somebody else, is that JJ can take great pleasure in the fact that the Texans are indeed better than the Colts right now. This was fun, JJ Watt bringing up little factoids to McAfee yesterday.
I saw a stat. Is this stat correct? I don't know if this stat's correct. I just saw a stat. You never know on X.
True.
Since the last time the Colts have won the AFC South, every other team in the division has won it twice.
Yeah.
At least.
That is true.
Really? Yeah, is that correct?
Titans and Jaguars are
in that. That's real?
Oh, yeah.
No way the Jags have won.
Bortles? Whoa, whoa, whoa. Yeah.
The
whoa.
Jags have won twice.
It's a championship.
Since the last time you guys won it, I couldn't believe it. I had the stat check.
Yep, it's real.
Well, you didn't fact check it. That's why you said, I don't know. And you just wanted to present it.
I came to the show that does the best fact checking on the planet.
Amen. So. Thank you. Nobody gives us enough credit for
that. Stat that.
Yeah, hashtag stat that. Yeah, it's not great, okay?
He's right.
The
fact-checking
or the record of the Colts?
I took that as the Colts, but probably both. Yeah, the Jags, man. Ballard got there in 2017. Chris Ballard, the GM of the Colts, got there in 2017. The Jags won it in 2017 and 2022, Trevor Lawrence's second year. The Titans won it in the COVID year 2020 and 2021. Mm-hmm. And the Texans have won it every other year. 18, yeah. 19, 23, and 24. The Colts, boop, zero. Zero division championships since like 2014. Been a while.
Look, in the AFC South, it's not, for a long time, it was kind of the poster child for insignificance. And it's not that anymore.
Okay.
Yeah,
says you.
Yeah. Not perennially, at least,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah,
perhaps. Maybe. But because even when the Jags made the AFC, now the AFC, the Jags made the AFC championship game, and in hindsight, it looks like a fluke, but they actually got screwed out of going to the Super Bowl that year, too. Because they had the interception that should have been returned for a touchdown, but it was whistled dead. Yep. They kind of got hosed that year. So there have been some good teams. I get kind of depressed when JJ and Pat are arguing about who holds court in the AFC South.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like, you know, arguing about who's got the best AA baseball team.
Yeah.
It's a depressing argument.
Welcome into the Sun Belt Conference podcast.
Yes, yeah, that's what it is. It's a mid-major.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to teams that are actually in contention, it's very rarely one of these teams.
Yeah.
So I don't enjoy it as much as I think those guys. And then I always wonder whether Pat McAfee actually really cares about it as much as he acts like he does. Because now he's become the fan that he says he's canceling his season tickets. He's not getting season tickets
next year because
of the way the organization's being run. Like, all right, well, you're not. How diehard a fan are you? Because it's not a money thing.
No.
You know, okay. So you're upset with the way the organization's being run or what's going on. All right, if you're a diehard fan who's got plenty of money, like why are you canceling your season tickets? That doesn't sound like a super fan to me.
Yeah. Of the other three teams in the AFC South, like obviously there's not a ton of fear going on January 1st, 2025 if they have to play these teams, say, I don't know, 4 days from now. Like the Titans beat the Texans earlier this year, but I don't fear the Titans in terms of like, okay, this is the team that's going to at least take away the division mantle from the Texans here. For me, Seth, like of all the things going on with these other three teams, the Colts by definition are the closest right now just because in the standings, they're at least around a 500 team. The other two teams are going to be picking in the top five in the draft, the Titans and the Jags. Probably the thing I fear the most in the division is that the Jags finally get a head coaching hire right that can get Trevor Lawrence right in some way.
Yeah.
And even then, I'm like, I don't know. Like, I thought Doug Peterson was that guy 2 years ago. But, like, if the Jags hire Ben Johnson, like, that would make me sit up a little bit. You know, like, oh, okay, Ben Johnson is the one who he resurrected Jared Goff. You know?
I think this is the thing about Doug Peterson, because I've seen him mentioned as a potential offensive coordinator for the Texans. For me right now, Doug Peterson, the book on him is that he seems to do a really good job of getting a flash of potential or getting the most out of a quarterback's natural skills, but then not developing him on further. So Carson Wentz, you know, he was involved. Nick Foles for a brief stretch of time. Mm-hmm. And then Trevor Lawrence for the 1 year that they made their playoff run. But there's no stacking on top of that. Now, maybe that's just bad luck on his part because that's who those quarterbacks are. It's not like any one of – it's not like Carson Wentz and Nick Foles went on to be perennial All-Pros with another coach or
something.
That's
true.
So – I don't know, but I don't look at him as like, oh yeah, that's the quarterback whisperer. I just don't feel that way about him.
Yeah, Cody Stutes had a really good piece for his subscription service, Houston Football. He went deep on candidates for offensive coordinator for the Texans if they choose to move on from Bobby Slowik in the offseason, which if they don't, then the reaction, I can't wait to see what the reaction would be. I think a lot of fans are out on Bobby Slowik right now. For better or worse, one of the names that was most interesting, and Cody actually had in his top seven, I think it was Josh McCown, who is the quarterbacks coach in Minnesota right now. He's since leaving football, he coached high school, and then he was the quarterbacks coach for 10 weeks last year in Carolina before Dave Tepper blew everybody out of there.
Yeah,
and now he's been the quarterbacks coach for Sam Darnold, who's had a near MVP caliber season. He's still in the mix in the top five for MVP odds. How would Texan fans react to Josh McCown being hired as the offensive coordinator here?
I think they'd be cool with it. Right. My whole issue with the Josh McCown experiment or potential experiment where he was a finalist for the head coaching job, like people, there's still people out there that try to claim that was a media creation or something. Like, no, the Texans themselves said that he was one of the finalists for the coaching job. That wasn't like some media creation.
Right.
But he had never been a full-time football coach before. If they had hired him as a quarterback's coach at that time, I would have been cool with it. I would have been excited about it. All the reports are on Josh McCown that he's a hell of a guy and that he's super smart. He's got a whole bunch of experience as a player, obviously. If they wanted to hire Josh McCown as either a quarterback's coach or offensive coordinator, that's the interesting one. You're like, okay, is that too big of a leap for a guy that's only been a full-time coach for a year or two? I don't know. There are other coordinators that have made that leap from like Jack Del Rio was only a position coach for, I think, a couple of years before he became defensive coordinator in Carolina. And I might be wrong on that, but there are guys who have made that leap pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, if he were to come here, it'd be as the OC. I don't think he's making a lateral move to come here. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You know,
there was an article. Sometimes these anonymous executive articles are funny because you can tell, like, okay, these guys aren't as clued in on the rest of the league as everybody else. It was an article about young quarterbacks or something, and this one anonymous executive was like, well, I'll tell you what they got to do for Bryce Young. This was earlier in the season before there was any problems. They got to get him up to Minnesota so he can work with those people because look at the job they've done. I'm like, the guy working with a quarterback up there is the guy that worked with Bryce Young last year.
Bryce got him fired.
So, I mean, it might be a little bit more complicated than that.
It might be. Now you're answering the question. You would be okay with Josh McCown.
Yeah.
How do you think the fans would react? Because we can't ignore the elephant in the room that Josh has heavy Jack Easterby stink on him to Texan fans.
Yeah, how I've always felt with Jack Easterby is that even though I was, as far as I can remember, the first person that started wondering what the hell this guy does and why is he here and why is his resume inaccurate. I don't deny that he did do some good things.
Sure.
I think there were some things that he did that were really smart and were like laying the right kind of framework. There were just a lot of other things that offset it. So, but included in that is like, I don't think just because Jack Easterby liked a guy means that that guy is horrible or trash.
No, he brought Nick Caserio here, and I think Nick's done a good job, you know?
Yeah. So let me be realistic about this. I think most people will say, okay, yeah, this is a guy that did have a lot of buzz about him. It was just like not enough buzz that anybody else, there was no other team in the league at that point that thought, hey, he should be our head coach. After having zero actual professional coaching experience. Yeah. Like it just didn't make any sense.
I 100% think there would be a faction of fans who would be nervous, not nervous about it, but just like PTSD sort of feeling about it. Not a huge portion. I'm mostly with you on this. I think the biggest thing that would make people positive about it is it would represent substantive change over what they've got right now. You know, I think there's a lot of people just hoping. I think there's a lot of anybody but Bobby going on right now, probably with a lot of people. Like fair or unfair. I know it's not all Bobby's fault, but he's the guy that's overseeing this.
The other thing too is that I think that I've changed in that. Originally, it said, all right, look, if you're going to run a Kubiak / Shanahan type of system, there's lots of coaches out there that you can go get and that have familiarity with it. So your quarterback, if he does have to get a different offense coordinator, might not have to change completely the entire methodology and all of that. I'm not as worried about that anymore. Yeah. I think we've seen enough good quarterbacks go from coordinator to coordinator who might do things very, very differently, and they're just fine. So it's at the end of the day, it's okay, how good of a coordinator is this guy? I'm not going to worry about what type of system he runs.
Well, and how good of a preparer is the quarterback that he's mentoring? And I think CJ is a maniacal preparer. You know, I think he'd be good.
Okay. No, this is a question you should have asked, Sean.
Yeah.
I'll excuse you for it.
Thank you.
No, it's the question that comes to mind is, honestly, I think the guy out there that you are under no threat of ever losing to a head coaching job, but who has done a really good job as an offensive coordinator, is Josh McDaniels.
Yeah.
But people are going to have feelings about that because that's the old New England connection. But I think he's the classic case of a guy that is a really good offensive coordinator, but when he becomes a head coach, he becomes a bad offensive coordinator and a bad head coach.
Yes.
So he's not going to get another job offer.
No.
I don't think there's anybody out there that thinks this time's going to be the time that he's a good head coach.
No, he's been bad in two places and welched on the other offer.
Right.
Indianapolis offered him the job and he left them standing at the altar. Let's see here. Payne and Pendergast, acknowledge yourselves. Oh, I'll do that all day long.
Acknowledge me.
Acknowledge us.
Do not underestimate your value to society, however humble you may be. Yeah, we appreciate that. Just talking about how, brighten up the texter's day. Appreciate that, man. And thank you for letting us acknowledge ourselves.
You know what I've struggled with the most this past year in 2024? Remember that? Remember 2024?
Vaguely.
I go into almost crisis mode sometimes when I want to be able to provide answers about why something like, say, the offense is as bad as it's been, and it's just so hard to actually accurately diagnose everything or to say with any, it's hard. I feel like I'd like to have answers, but there's so much going on here.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm letting people down.
No.
I'd love to just be able to say, this is the elixir. Fix this, fix that, fix that.
Gotta get that out of your head. Get that out of your head in 2025, man. Get that out of your head. You're not letting people down.
I'm going to stop caring about helping people. Got it. I can do that. That's going to be my resolution.
But continue to acknowledge ourselves. One more time for the people in the back, Jace. Yeah. Give it to me one more time. Come on, Jace.
Thank you.
There we go.
Yeah. You know we need more holidays that celebrate us.
Yes.
I want one a month on this station. I want the other shows to have to celebrate
the highlights of our show.
Pendergast and our tenure. Yes.
As we're 3 minutes over on the break. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. All right. I've got my ideal scenario for the wild card round. And also, today is an epic day of football that we've got to lay out for you here, and we'll do that coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
It's chilly out in Pasadena, man. I'm watching game day on the TV here, Seth, and you can see the breath coming out of Pat McAfee's mouth and Nick Saban's mouth. They're not bundled up, but it does look like it's a little chilly. I'm guessing.
Do they have any comedians on that Nick Saban's going to try to might potentially leap across the desk and murder?
not yet.
Shane Gillis was hilarious on there, and Nick Saban did not want a single piece of it.
No.
He's a grumpy old man the entire day.
He did not like being called Alabama Jones, that's for sure. That was good.
Which, for those of you who didn't see it, he was wearing a hat that looked kind of like an Indiana Jones hat. So he called him Alabama Jones.
That's fantastic. That is so good. So as a Texan fan,
he's going to be back in coaching next year. Saban was like, that's a moment. Saban's like, this is like, I spend a lifetime building. What
the hell
is
Gillis
this?
Shane Gillis drove him back into coaching.
Yeah.
That'd be hilarious.
You're a stooge now. Entertain me, Nicky.
Man.
You're not a coach anymore.
Maybe Belichick gives the blueprint for these stodgy old dudes to get back into the college game, man, if he's successful at UNC. You never know. So Texan fans, I think, are looking at these play. A lot of the ones I interact with are like, okay, they're thinking like wild card, maybe we get a win in the wild card round, but then it is, it's going to be curtains if they've got to go to Baltimore or Buffalo or Kansas City. If you're one of those people, that's fine. You're entitled to your point of view. I choose to still look at the playoffs as something that if a few things break the right way, and the Texans figure a few things out, maybe you can win a divisional round game and get to the AFC championship game. I think at this point I would sign up for making it to the AFC championship game blind. Like, if that means they won two playoff games, I would sign up for that, and I don't even care what the AFC title game looks like. This team, with all these problems, will have made it further than any other team. I'll sign up for it. I had a buddy that texted me yesterday when you and I were talking about who would you rather play in the 4 versus 5 game, the Chargers or the Steelers. We all agree nobody wants to play the Ravens in that game.
Ever again. I don't want to ever play here. Yeah.
And to that point, I had a buddy. My buddy Rick texted me. He goes, here's one way to look at it. If you're somebody who feels like the Texans can do more than just win a wild card round game, yeah, it's not so much about who you want to play in the 4 versus 5. It's about which of those teams that are left over, Chargers or Steelers, because they'll be the sixth seed, which of those teams has a better chance of going up to Baltimore and beating the Ravens so that you get Baltimore out. Just get them out. You know what I mean?
The Steelers, and the Steelers make the most sense given that, like, they've had the Ravens number in Baltimore over the past few years until this last game.
Yep.
And, like, they beat them earlier this season. I feel better about Pittsburgh winning in Baltimore.
I do too.
Than the Chargers, especially warm weather team in Baltimore where it might be chilly that day.
And yeah. I still come back, especially compared to last year with the wild card game when it was just such an electric atmosphere in that stadium for that wild card round game. I still come back to playing the Steelers and being like, this is not going to feel like a home game. This is not going to be the type of game where if a potential free agent like Daniil Hunter were sitting in the crowd like he was for the Cleveland wild card round game last year. Daniil said like that was a big part of my decision. I was at that game last year and it was electric in that stadium. It ain't going to be that way if the Steelers play. So I want Chargers, Texans, Steelers, Ravens, and then I want the Bengals to find their way into the postseason at 7 because they're easily the team that could be at 7. Broncos, Dolphins. Bengals are the team that could be at 7 that's capable of going up to Buffalo and scoring with the Buffalo Bills.
I'll tell you what. The Vikings and the Ravens games are the two games that I think were the most thoroughly humiliating this year. Is that fair? None of the other ones are jumping out at me. Well, the Jets, but that's a whole different
the second
ball.
Half of the second half of the Jets game and just the mere fact that you lost to the Titans at home.
Right.
But as far as like getting steamrolled, yes, Vikings and Ravens.
By a good team where it's like, okay, you can't blame this on travel or anything. Those are the two most embarrassing teams. So you don't have to worry about the Vikings unless you got to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
The Ravens are the only other team where, all right, listen, I'm not going to be a purist here and act like, no, I don't even want to advance in the playoffs unless I reverse the grave injury that the Ravens gave me and vanquish my enemy. I don't care.
No.
Duck him.
No.
Duck him.
No.
I will duck the hell out of him. And if it means the Steelers beat the Ravens, yes. In the wild card round, and then you got to face the Steelers, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry about it, Baltimore.
No.
Hell of a regular season.
Give me a second round. Give me a divisional round that is number one seed Chiefs versus 7-seeded Bengals and number 4-seed Texans versus the number 6-seeded Steelers. I'll take it,
Sean,
all day long.
Sean, I'm a 49-year-old man. The best football team I was ever on was in 1999 with the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Mm-hmm.
We went 14-2 in the regular season.
Yep.
Offense was incredible. We lost to one team that year. It was the Tennessee Titans. We were 14-2. And we lost to the Titans. And who do we face in the AFC Championship game? The damn Titans.
In Jacksonville,
now,
right?
Like now, do you think for a single minute that I'm sitting here at the age of 49 thinking like, well, if we, you know, it wouldn't have mattered if I'd gone to the Super Bowl because it would have been a hollow victory because we wouldn't have beaten the Titans that year. And I don't know if I could have lived with myself. No, of course not.
No, dude.
Looking out in hindsight, God, I wish that stupid lateral that wasn't called up.
I would be a miserable person.
Sorry.
If I were you and I was on that team, I would be so miserable because I, like you, go to Radio Row every year and I watch some of these clowns that happen to be on Super Bowl teams that are walking around like they won the MVP of the Super Bowl and they're getting treated that way too.
Because they have firsthand experience about like, hey, what's it like playing in a Super Bowl? What's it like the night before?
Their little collateral material they're walking around with says 2-time Super Bowl champ on it. Sit down.
I don't worry about that as much. Like, any, honestly, Sean, because I'm an athlete in sports media, I already feel that I've got like the huge like fast forward button. Like, yeah. The fact that a lot of other people who are more talented as broadcasters don't get the opportunity. So I don't ever worry about that. JJ Watt now, I feel like JJ is one of those guys who is a Hall of Fame caliber player, but when it comes to Super Bowl time, I think he sees a little bit of like, oh wow, yeah, they'd much rather talk to Teddy Bruschi than me.
A lot of FOMO
because of all that other stuff. Yeah.
A lot of FOMO. Your autograph is worth more too when you're on a Super Bowl team. Do you ever think of that? Do you ever think how rich you would be if you were on a Super Bowl team?
No, I never looked at it. I never expected to go into media at all. Just so I kind of like, I never worried about any of the. You know my outlook towards life. I embrace the ephemeral nature of everything, and I don't worry too much about honors and stuff like that.
When I was doing that,
which maybe kept me from being a better football player.
Guys,
you know, at the end of the day, none of this really matters, right?
Right. Or you just go, but it all led to this, and I'm happy right now. I told the interviewer yesterday, Derek Futterman of Barrett Sports Media. I did an interview with him about my decade at Sports Radio 610, and a big part of that, obviously, is the last 5 years hosting with you. And I said, I think with some level of accuracy, that that I think I'm at least partially responsible for Seth's journey of getting into radio to begin with, because if you recall, back when I was over at 1560 in mornings with John Granato, it was the 2011 season. The first season, the Texans were like really popping and really good.
Yeah.
And Granato, who had been the sideline reporter when you were a player and you knew John from back in the day, we're just sitting there one morning after like the second or third game. And John's like, I'm going to call Seth Payne. I don't know what he's up to these days, but he'd be great to have come on. And you came on with us and you were amazing. Yeah. And I said to John right afterwards, I said, we need to have him on every week. He's great. And you kept coming on with us. And then next thing we knew, you were over at Sports Radio 610. We created a monster over here.
Well, I came up, I took a tour of it. You know, I was like, oh, maybe I'll do this thing. Because I was at a point where I was trying to figure out what the hell I really wanted to do with my life.
Yeah.
Because I had plans when I was done, and I got a year into it, and I was like, I hate this whole plan. So it was good timing. Yeah. And it was, so thank you, Sean.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you for the nudge.
Yeah.
You gave me that nudge.
Yeah. I just wanted to have you. You made our show sound good. I didn't know Gavin Spittle was going to come handpick you and plunk you down in the lineup against us.
After that season, I told Brandy, I was like, let's take a trip to Houston and see what the opportunities might be. And I went around and I toured all the radio stations and talked to TV people and everything. And Sports Radio 610 offered me a respectable
wage.
And it actually wasn't actually, but it was a wage at all.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it, I'm like, oh, wait a second. Yeah. I honestly, that's where it's hard to get it. I'm like, if that was the actual salary, there's no way in hell. Like, if that was my salary I was going to depend on, there's no way in hell I would have taken that job. But I looked at it as like, okay, I'll get it. It'll be an opportunity to do more. And I don't, you know, like it wasn't, I had other sources of income.
You're investing in yourself in a way.
Actually,
you know?
I'm going to text Gavin now and now think about how much I made that first year. What the hell?
Yeah.
Seth Payne.
I got Seth retroactively angry about his hiring at Sports Radio 610.
11 years ago.
That's funny.
12 years ago?
When did you get here?
13 years ago.
2012?
Yeah.
2012, yeah. 13 years ago, thereabouts. Reggie Atatula, John Lopez, they are in the loop. Today's my anniversary, my 11-year anniversary with the station.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so fantastic.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
Happy anniversary.
It's been a hell of a run. Thanks, Reggie, I appreciate it.
Are you the third longest tenured host? Is it Lopez, then me, then you?
Yes, on air, host on air, yeah. There's longer tenured employees, but as far as the lineup goes, yeah, for sure. And I got a ways to go to catch you guys. So
Seth, do you remember me texting you back when you were doing all this stuff?
And I do.
I said, you got to get down here, man. You got to get down here.
Yeah. Thank you. I couldn't remember the timing of it, but I knew that you had encouraged me at some point.
John Lopez, recruiter.
I was.
Yeah.
You and Bob Allen also was a big guy. Like, while I was, Bob Allen was the first guy that, while I was a player, was like telling me, like, you should really, really consider it. I was like,
Now here you are.
I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be the media hungry player.
I say that.
I want to be a.
I say that so you can blame me.
Oh, yeah.
Did you do that?
No, thank you.
Did you do that with your own, like, on your own, or did management come to you and say, hey,
no, on my own.
John, you're a likable guy. Can you just text Seth and tell us how much you would love to work with
him? I was working with Vandermeer, and I think we had you on a few times.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was. We came in. Yeah, you texted me, I think, after I was on with you guys. Yeah.
You were cheating on me and Granato?
I'd do it with anybody, man.
Oh, you whore.
It was a different time back then.
Oh, man, this affects our entire relationship.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes, John, thank you for honestly, yes, thank you for encouraging me to do what is like not like remotely close to a real job and have a lot of fun. Yes. I am grateful. I am grateful every day that I honestly have a job where I've never once felt like, ah, crap, this thing again. Yeah.
That's true.
Judas and Pendergast here on Sports Radio 610 as we wrap things up.
And I actually never texted Sean because I didn't really know him that well then. Yeah. And I thought there was no way you were going to leave.
1516? Yeah. No, I did an interview yesterday with Barrett Sports Media, and I said, it's something I've said before, like I think some people over there take it as disrespect, but in 2009, I saw kind of what the financial ceiling was going to be for me over there, and I'm like, I got three kids to put through college, and this is the gold standard here in town, so I got to get over there. So I put the list together of all the things I needed to do to get over to Sports Radio 610.
You had a list and everything.
I did, man.
Yeah.
Make sure Gavin Spittle knows who you are. That was at the top of the list.
Hey,
everything is sales.
That would be a good, Sean, since you're, one of your resolutions this year is to grow your social media following. That would be a really good January 1st video. It's just like a little tell that story, recreate the list. To show, like, hey, I had a goal. I broke it down into the steps I would have to take to meet that goal. And then there's a ba-ding, ba-ding, ba-ding.
I've still got it. That's good advice. I appreciate that. Yeah, that's. I may do that. We started an argument between Seth and I, kind of tangentially started an argument between you guys.
Yes.
Did you tell Lopez what Reggie had said about him?
No, not yet. No, I'm going to text it to him.
That's on him?
That's on the group text that Reggie's not on.
Yeah.
As opposed to the one that you're not on, Seth. No. They got into what was a heated debate.
Yes, it was.
Over what exactly constitutes Houston. Like calling the town that you live in or the part of the city that you live in, still calling it Houston when people ask you where you're from.